a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Judiciary Committee of the Senate will come to order. I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll.
Senators Valley.
I am here.
Monroe.
Here.
Kirkaby.
Here.
Unhoff.
Here.
Radford.
Here.
Bigalka.
Here.
Teason.
Here. Thank you. Welcome to everyone this morning. A reminder to silence your communications devices. Sign in at the podium if you're going to speak today. We have four House bills on our agenda today. When we get to the end of the agenda, we'll talk a little bit about our remaining calendar, but it looks pretty good, actually. Any discussion or motion regarding the minutes from Thursday's meeting? Motion by Hunhoff, seconded by Monroe to approve the minutes from our last meeting. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, motion carried. Minutes are approved. Okay, I think no reason to deviate from the schedule as it's published today. So unless anybody has any comments, let's get to work. We'll start with House Bill 1073, an act to provide for the cancellation of expired mechanics and materialmen's liens. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1073. Good morning, Senator Solano.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I bring forward for your consideration this morning House Bill 1073, which provides an efficient means to remove a mechanic's lien after the lien is no longer effective and can no longer be foreclosed on. Currently, the law is silent on how to remove a lien after its effective period, which is namely 6 years when that time is expired. Lawyers have used different methods to obtain court order for removal, but they all take more time and more money than what House Bill 1073 would provide. And the mechanics and materialmen's lien can be found under the South Dakota Codified Law Sections 44-9-1. Which I've got just a copy of that that the page will hand out to you. And it provides in part, give me a minute here. It provides in part, whoever shall, at the request of the owner or the duly authorized agent or representative of the owner or any contractor or subcontractor, furnish skill, labor services, including light, power, or water, equipment, or materials for the improvement, development, or operation of property as herein after specified, shall have a first lien thereon and the appurtenances thereto prior and superior to all other liens except those of the state or the United States and except existing liens, mortgages, other encumbrances, then of record or of which the lien claimant has actual notice, for the price or value of the same, so furnished, subject to the further provisions of this chapter, as follows. For the erection, alteration, repair, removal of any building, fixture, bridge, fence, or other structure, for the grading, filling in or excavating the same, or digging, repairing the ditch, drain, well, cistern, reservoir, or vault thereon, or for laying, altering, or repairing any sidewalk, curb, gutter, paving, sewer, pipe, conduit. I won't finish reading it, but you get the idea of what we're talking about here. So the example of when this would come into play is when you have a subcontractor that does work for a house, for a general contractor, but does not get paid. The subcontractor can get a lien against the homeowner by providing notice and properly filing a lien statement under the lien chapter of the code. The subcontractor then has 6 years to foreclose on the lien to recover against the homeowner the value of the services rendered. Now, within the code, prior to the 6 years expiring, the homeowner can serve notice on the lien holder and demand that they enforce the lien. And if the lien, the subcontractor, the lien holder, in this scenario, does not take action to enforce the lien, then the homeowner can file an affidavit in the with the Register of Deeds within 40 days of the notice being served and have the lien removed by the Register of Deeds. But there's no such process in place that's available to a homeowner once the 6 years has expired on the lien. The lien is ineffective at the point at which 6 years has expired, and the title standards dictate that the lien should be ignored. But it still exists at the Register of Deeds office and has the appearance of an encumbrance against the property. The title standard that I've also provided you reads, a mechanic's lien may be disregarded after lapse of the time within which suit for the foreclosure may be filed, which is 6 years, unless proceedings for its foreclosure have previously commenced. So with this recommendation this bill, the proposed change to the statute found in House Bill 1073 does not affect the lien holder's right, but does clean the property records at the Register of Deeds office. It also prevents then the appearance of a false encumbrance against property. And finally, House Bill 1073 provides an efficient means to remove an expired lien in a manner similar to current law, which, again, is when you submit a notice to the lien holder requesting them to foreclose. So with that, I'd be happy to stand by for questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's take further proponent testimony on House Bill 1073. Further proponent testimony? Morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Matt McCall. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls and a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Land Title Association. Want to thank Senator Solano. I think he did a great job of explaining the bill and what that does. Land Title Association is generally involved in the issuance of title insurance policies. We have members all across the state of South Dakota. We issue title insurance when property is sold or transferred or mortgaged. And so this bill doesn't directly impact us, but we did want to just associate ourselves with the proponents and their desire to provide a simple means for consumers or for property owners who own property and who are not going to transfer it or sell it or mortgage it, to provide a way for them to have these liens that are expired marked canceled on the chain of title. So again, while it doesn't directly impact us because of the existing title standard, as the senator had identified, it is consistent with the concepts in that title standard, and we'd encourage your support of House Bill 1073. With that, I'll stand by for questions, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. McCauley at this point? Okay. Yes, sir. Senator Monroe, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, or Mr. McCauley.
Good morning.
I always wanted him to be the speaker. Do you understand this bill just to say that after 6 years, the problem's really gone, but it's just hanging out on these records, and that's why you want this bill, is just to be able to take care of that situation?
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Senator Monroe, for the question. So when a mechanics lien is filed, it's on the record, right? It's out there. If it's on file against your personal property, even when it's filed, even after 6 years expires, it's still out there. From a title standards perspective, it can later be ignored. But let's just say you live in the house for 10, 15 years, that lien is still there. If you ever go to sell it, it's ignored. But while you're sitting there and owning the property, there's a lien that's out there. It's kind of like a mortgage that's out there that's never been satisfied. So as Senator Solano correctly explained, it automatically expires after 6 years unless an action is taken to enforce it, in which case then the property owner would have this way of going down and literally having it marked canceled. the Register of Deeds would be marking it canceled on the title. The other way, as Senator Solano alluded to, that's a little bit quicker, is if you disagree with that lien that's been filed, current law, separate from this bill, allows you to send a notice to the lien holder and demand that they file a suit to foreclose it. They then have 30 days to start a foreclosure action, or they lose their lien rights. And that would also allow you to go down and have this canceled as well, too.
Okay. Thank you. Further proponent testimony. House Bill 1073, further proponent testimony. Seeing none, is there opponent testimony to House Bill 1073? Any opponent testimony? Seeing no opponent testimony, we'll move to questions. Any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony and move to discussion and action on the bill. Senator Valley.
I'll move to pass.
Second.
Motion to pass, Senator Valley, seconded by Senator Monroe. Discussion on the motion, Senator Valley.
I don't think I have a whole lot of discussion. I think this is something that is pretty well explained, and I think it just makes it more workable. I know that if you were to go get a loan, someone would say, I see you got a lien on your property. And I think this is probably what would satisfy that problem. So thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Seeing no further discussion, the motion is due pass on House Bill 1073. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Valley.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Kirkaby.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye. Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bigalka.
I move consent.
Motion consent from Senator Bigalka, seconded by Senator Valley. Any discussion on the consent motion? Those in favor of consent say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? 1073 will go to the floor on consent. House Bill 1077. A bill to enact the Uniform Real Property Transfer on Death Act. House Bill 1077. Is open for proponent testimony, Senator Kirkaby.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Senator Mark Kirkaby from Rapid City. And respectfully and humbly bringing to you House Bill 1077 for your consideration. It's an act to establish and adopt the great state of South Dakota, the Uniform Real Property Transfer on Death Tax. That's been enacted in 13 states, and several other states are considering the possible passage of this legislation. It's being well received because it permits a simple, inexpensive way for an owner to transfer his or her home to their children without the expense of going to court. South Dakota law already permits most personal property, such as bank accounts and stocks, to transfer to the heirs upon death. House Bill 1077 basically completes that process. In its simplest versions, with this little 14-page bill, that owner of that property would prepare a special deed for transfer on death, naming the beneficiary, and records it at the Register of Deeds. The owner still maintains complete control of that real estate and can sell it, rent it, mortgage it, certainly change the beneficiary at any time up until death. And upon that death, that beneficiary files an affidavit together with a certified copy of that death certificate, and the transfer is effective. If the real property is subject to a mortgage or a lien or any other encumbrances, that certainly still would remain in place. If the descendant's estate is wholly or partially insolvent and there are creditors involved, they go through that standard procedure on settling any debt up to that value of that real estate property. The bill incorporates, by reference, existing Uniform Probate Code anti-lapse provisions. It's a valuable estate planning tool for so many hardworking South Dakotans. It's easy to use, it's inexpensive, and it facilitates that end-of-life planning for our citizens of modest to middle class means. With that, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I would humbly ask for your favorable consideration and passage of House Bill 1077. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you. A further proponent testimony, House Bill 1077. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Tom Barnett representing the State Bar. Senator Kirkeby is a tough act to follow. I think he's probably earned an honorary law degree. That was a wonderful presentation and explanation. If we roll the clock back 1 year, you'll remember House Bill 1096, which was last year's version of 1077. And I came to this committee because after the House had passed it, I believe unanimously last year, Lieutenant Governor asked me a couple questions about one particular section, and I said, give me the weekend to study it, and I did, and discovered that we had a problem. So I came to you folks and said, I need a year to fix that one section, but I had use for that vehicle, and I asked you folks to send it down to Senate Appropriations, which later became the Rural Lawyer Recruitment under the leadership of Senator Valley. So that's the long history. It's the same bill, except this year we fixed the one problem that we detected last year. I can go through section by section, but I think that Senator Kirkeby covered the stuff. The important things are it is inexpensive, quick, easy way to transfer the property. It is particularly friendly for your modest and middle-class folks. We included, and generally speaking, we don't like forms in the statute, but because this Uniform Act runs contrary to what all we lawyers learned in law school, that there has to be a delivery and notice and acceptance and all those kinds of things, we included the forms to help our lawyers work through this process, but it is a very simple process. The critical thing is that as Senator Kirkeby said, you can change your mind at any point that you want as long as you're still alive. You have the right to change your mind. Secondly, creditors are protected. The Department of Social Services has up to 2 years to follow up if the taxpayers had provided any approaching death assistance for medical purposes. Regular creditors, unsecured creditors, have 6 months. It's all similar to the Uniform Probate Code, which this legislature adopted in 1993. And I'll be happy to answer any specific questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Barnett? Senator Bradford, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I look through this thing. It's supposedly the answer, but it looks pretty lengthy and kind of complicated to be simple. I'm wondering if the death of the person that you have on here prior to your death, then you would have to transfer it immediately, or how does that work?
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Once the transfer on death deed bill has been recorded at the Register of Deeds, if the owner takes no action upon the owner's death, it will go to the person they designated, probably a child in most cases. The child is under no obligation to immediately file the affidavit. There's no statute requirement that they move expeditiously. One would assume, though, that they would because they have to have an insurable interest. And so if it's your home, the child who now is going to be the owner upon filing of the affidavit is probably going to move expeditiously because they'll want to take possession. They'll want to make sure that the homeowner's insurance is going to be continued and so forth. So while the statute doesn't mandate that they move immediately, in the vast majority of cases, it would move forward within a matter of weeks. And as Senator Kirkeby said, we already allow the transfer the simple transfer of your bank accounts and stocks and so forth with very little paperwork. You don't even need a lawyer in most cases. And so this bill is simply following a similar provision that we've already adopted in this legislature for handling personal property. And so this was just the final step. And did that answer your question, Senator Bradford?
Go ahead. Except I said, to follow up, but I ask if that person you were doing it to died first.
Mr. Chairman,
go ahead.
If that person dies first, obviously they're not going to get it. And if they don't survive, then the anti-lapse statutes kick back in, so that it would go either the original owner would have to do a new deed, or it would simply pour back into their estate and follow by either their will or intestate succession. And that's why you see the references, I think, on page 4 of the bill that cross-reference into the Uniform Probate Code, because those are the anti-lapse statutes, and we don't want to have property out there with no place to go. And so if it fails by the prior death of who's going to receive it, then you're going to look back to the anti-lapse statutes, very similar to what happens if you leave something to a child in your will and then your child predeceases you. We have those same anti-lapse statutes that would kick in.
One question about the what's the source of the uniform?
Where does it originate, sir?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This act was drafted by the Uniform Laws Commission. Every state participates in that. We've adopted the Uniform Probate Code, uniform transfer to minors, child for gifts, and so forth. So I'm not sure which senators are on there. I know that Representative Lust and Representative Gosch and Representative Feinstein are all the South Dakota's representatives on that Uniform Laws Commission. They meet and study. This is lawyers, judges, scholars from all over the country, and they look at an issue, they study it, they publish drafts, they take public input and comment, and then when they've got all that done, then they'll issue the uniform law. There are probably 25 to 30 of them out there. South Dakota's adopted maybe half. And so it comes from the Uniform Laws Commission. And thank you for the question, sir.
Thank you. I believe that to be the case, but I don't think anybody had stated that. So I thank you. Any further questions for Mr. Barnett? Seeing none, we'll continue proponent testimony, House Bill 1077. Is there further proponent testimony? Good morning again.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Once again, Matt McCauley. I'm a lawyer from Sioux Falls and a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Land Title Association. I'd like to, again, start off by thanking the proponents for their work on this bill. There's been a lot of work that's been put into this by many members of the bar outside of session since last year, and some of the issues that were raised, and we're supportive of the bill, House Bill 1077 in its form that you see here in front of you today. I can tell you as a lawyer who works in real estate, I know for a fact that there are members of the bar from across the state who, when they see a new piece of legislation that's passed and want to advise clients accordingly, they will go back and listen to some of the legislative history and listen to the audio links that we have online. And so from a big picture perspective, the only concern that the Land Title Association continues to have with this, and this is a concern that is in the law today, and I want to make it clear that the bill doesn't make it worse, but that concern continues, is that after if someone dies and transfers property, or there is a DSS has a claim, for up to 2 years, a lien that follows the real estate for any Title 28 assistance that would have been paid to that property owner. And so there may be a situation with a transfer on death deed where title is unmarketable for a period of time. You can't get title insurance without taking some further actions after a transfer of death deed is filed or it becomes effective following the death of the owner. I've talked to the proponents about this. We know about this this issue. Again, it's an issue under current law, and we're going to work with this for a year and see how this plays out. And if there are concerns that are broader than that, we will come back to the legislature next year with some possibilities to fix that. But at this point in time, we're comfortable with it moving forward with the understanding that because of the way this is drafted, there may be circumstances where the new owner has unmarketable title, meaning they can't get title insurance for a period of time until that DSS claim is satisfied or there's some proof from DSS that there is no claim out there. And so with that, we would encourage your support of House Bill 1077. I'll stand by for questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any questions for Mr. McCauley? Senator Valley, go ahead.
I'm not aware of that claim that DSS may have. Is that can I go to DSS and just say we don't owe anything? So can I get a clean title, or do you pay it, or how does that work,
Mr. Chairman? Thank you, Senator Valley, for the question. A property owner dies and has received some assistance from the Department of Social Services, was indigent, and owned, had one piece of property, some real estate. Under present law, that claim would survive for up to 2 years. DSS knows about the property. Ordinarily, as part of the probate process, that claim is submitted. DSS is paid, and then the proceeds distributed to the beneficiaries, usually done through a probate process. But the transfer on death, this is a non-probate process. And so there is provisions in this bill for DSS to be notified. The form has that optional statement on there. If you are receiving property from a loved one and this issue comes up, you can simply contact the Department of Social Services, and they will provide a letter that says no aid was provided. And I think in those cases, you're going to be able to get a title insurance policy that would say you have clear title. There is still a provision, as Mr. Barnett said, for creditors to file claims for a six-month period. But I think big picture, DSS is the largest concern, so there may need to be some additional work that a beneficiary takes, but we have provisions in law to get that claim either stated that there is no claim or just get the claim paid for and satisfied so you can get clean title. But that it's a necessary provision, and it's to make sure that the state is reimbursed if there are assets of that decedent.
Thank you. Presumably we have half the testimony for a future bill next year, so thank you. Any further questions? Mr. McCauley, would you make sure you get signed in, please, as well? Any further proponent testimony, House Bill 1077? Any further proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there opponent testimony? Opponent testimony, House Bill 1077. Seeing no opponent testimony, any further questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, move to committee discussion and action. Senator Valley.
I'll move to pass.
Motion by Valley to pass. Is there a second? Seconded by Senator Monroe. Any discussion? Senator Valley, go ahead.
Well, it is rather lengthy, as the senator said. When they say it's a simple bill and it's 14 pages, I had to get a chuckle when he says, you say it's simple, and that is a slight chuckle. However, it isn't only our eyes that have looked at this. This is a uniform bill that has been looked at by a lot of legal eyes in other states, and so I think what we need to be careful of is how that meshes into our state laws. And I think Mr. McCauley talked about the fact of our two-year law there, state law currently, so we may have to look at that. But other than that, I can see where this would be. It would be a benefit for people not having to go through probate. So I'd urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Well, I would add, I prompted Mr. Barnett to talk about the Uniform Laws Commission because I have a great deal of respect for the Uniform Laws Commission. They work tirelessly on, it seems like it takes them forever to, work through this in multiple jurisdictions. And, I think at the end of the day, first of all, I think they produce good legislation because, as Senator Valley said, there's a lot of eyes on this before it comes before us. And secondly, I think it's a big benefit to our citizens to be able to know that, we have uniform laws, that we can go from state to state and have things like this sort of uniformly applied. And I think whenever we can do that, we should do that because citizens benefit from it. So, again, I appreciate the work Uniform Laws Commission, and I support this bill. Any further discussion on the bill? So, Senator Bradford, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, but I think it's too bad the federal government doesn't take some statements from this Uniform Law Act. It would have simplified a lot of the entitlements we get through for land, and ends up so fractionated that it's beyond belief that would have been simplified if they'd have had something like this for our people to pass on their land. But, of course, the feds never listened to the common people anyway. They got their own ideas.
States are well known for doing things in better fashion than federal government. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on House Bill 1077. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Valley.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Kirkaby.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye. Motion carried. I'll hand over the gavel.
House Bill 1119. Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 1119 is a cleanup bill from last year's SB 70. As you recall, a part of Senate Bill 70 was a policy discussion regarding preliminary hearings in our judicial system. And at that time, we made a policy decision to limit preliminary hearings to felonies, as is true in the case of most other states in the country. So in the process, the preliminary hearing language for misdemeanors was stricken from our code, except that we missed one section. As you see in front of you, 23A-6-3 is a section regarding fugitives, and in that section there remained a reference to a preliminary hearing for Class 1 misdemeanor, and this bill simply cleans up that language and makes it consistent with the rest of the changes that were made in regards to Senate Bill 70. So I think we have other proponent testimony that can explain it further. Appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Senator. Other proponents for 1119?
Good morning, Paul Bichon with the State's Attorneys Association. I frankly think Senator Teason did a great job of the explanation. This was a miss from last year. Let me just hit a couple points. What is an information so we can understand what that is? When you commence a criminal proceeding, you do it either by a law enforcement officer arresting someone. If that occurs, they give them a ticket. That ticket is also known as a complaint. Or your prosecuting attorney can file with the court a complaint to get an arrest warrant. So those things are similar documents. They indicate who the defendant is, what the crime is, when the crime occurred. And so that's your paperwork that gets a bad guy into court. Secondly, if you're dealing with a Class 1 misdemeanor, that's an offense that will have a penalty of 1 year in jail or $2,000 fine, or a felony, you also have to file an information, unless you present it to the grand jury where they get an indictment. So that's your other document. So if it's a Class 1 or a felony, you file this document called an information. What's an information? An information contains the same thing that's on a complaint, with a couple of, and one major exception. So the information will say, on or about this date, Paul Bichon committed this offense, and this is the penalty. The other thing that that document contains is a list of witnesses known at that time. That's different than the complaint. So it informs the defendant that these are the witnesses that support the facts as alleged to be a criminal violation. Now, we missed that last year. The section, as Senator Teason adequately described in this chapter, that's 23-6, that deals with these other documents, indictments, and informations. And so this is, frankly, just a necessary cleanup to relate back to say that you can file the information for Class 1 misdemeanors, but no other information can be filed for a felony unless that person has had a preliminary hearing. That's then consistent with the policy change last year that said for felonies, defendants are entitled to preliminary hearings. Perhaps that's more of a brief primer on criminal procedure than you wanted this morning, but I thought it was important just to give you that background as to what these documents are. I'll remain here for questions, and we appreciate your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul. Any other proponents? 1119.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Charlie McGuigan with the Attorney General's Office. And I have not signed in yet, but I will do that. We support House Bill 1119, as Senator Teason and Mr. Bichon said. This was part of the Senate Bill 70 process. This was one section that was missed, and we support the bill because it carries out the intent that we had last year with Senate Bill 70. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other proponents? Any other proponents? How about opponents? Any opponents to 1119? Any opponents? Do we have any questions? Any questions from the committee of the proponents? Senator Bradford. Charlie McGuigan, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Charlie, the Senate Bill 70 went in July of last year. And, of course, it was well known that at that time there was a little bit of a problem from defense attorneys about taking away the preliminary hearing for had there been any feedback at all as to the fact that we took away the preliminary hearing on it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Bradford, you know, I wish the defense attorneys were here to answer that question for you. There's been a lot of feedback on many aspects of Senate Bill 70 as we have been implementing it, not only from the defense bar, but from prosecutors and even judges. You know, I would say Senate Bill 70 is still a work in progress. If I recall right, the final implementation date isn't until sometime in 2015. So Senate Bill 70 is still being implemented, and I suspect there will be ongoing discussions for the next year or more as the different parts and pieces of Senate Bill 70 get put into place. But, yes, there were a lot of discussions during both the study that led up to Senate Bill 70 concerning preliminary hearings, and you heard testimony about that last year, but there have been ongoing discussions both after Senate Bill 70 passed and prior to implementation on July 1st and since July 1st has occurred. So, yes, Senator Bradford, there have been a lot of discussions.
Thank you.
Anyone else with a question of the proponents? If not, do you need any follow-up there, Senator Teason? Okay. We'll open it up to a discussion and or action from the committee on House Bill 1119.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass.
We have a do pass from Senator Monroe on 1119. Second by Senator Hunhoff. Any discussion? No discussion. I'll ask the Secretary to call the roll on the do pass motion.
Senators Valley?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Kirkaby?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Bradford?
A reluctant aye.
Walka?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
House Bill 1119 passes 7-0.
Move consent.
And we have a consent motion from Senator Valley.
Second.
There is a second. Be a voice vote. All in favor of consent say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
It will not go on consent. So I will turn the gavel over to Senator Teason.
Thank you. Move now to House Bill 1125. House Bill 1125 is a bill to repeal certain outdated and obsolete provisions regarding judicial remedies. Representative Johns, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Representative Timothy Johns, District 31. House Bill 1125 is an act entitled An Act to Repeal Outdated and Obsolete Provisions Regarding Judicial Remedies. This bill was brought at the request of the Governor's Office. It has been an ongoing policy of the second floor, as well as this body, that we would periodically review our statutes and eliminate outdated and duplicative statutes. The statutes under consideration in this bill are found in SDCL Title 21, which deals with judicial remedies. Before this bill was prepared, the title was reviewed by members of the South Dakota State Bar Association, and suggestions were given to the Governor's Legal Counsel. Sections 1 and 2 of the bill deal with statutes which address damages recoverable in a civil action and the interest that can be recovered thereon. They are no longer necessary, as their provisions are now found in SDCL 21-1-13.1. Sections 3, 4, 5, and 6 deal with statutes that are found in SDCL Chapter 21-10. The statutes all relate to a tax of $300 against a building or grounds and against the person or persons who are maintaining a nuisance. The provisions have not been traditionally used, as the balance of our nuisance statutes provide for the use of injunctions and abatements, which are the most effective way of dealing with nuisances. There is no need for these statutes. Finally, the remaining sections of the Act delete the four statutes found in SDCL 21-25, which allow parties to submit a controversy to a court for resolution without having to file a court action. This chapter has never been used, since it provides for a judgment being issued by a judge making a decision, and a judgment cannot be enforced or appealed without that action having been filed with the clerk of courts. Bottom line, the action has to be filed anyway, and there's no need for this chapter. I will stand by for questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Johns? Further proponents, House Bill 1125. Further proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1125? Any opponents? Seeing none, any further questions? Seeing no questions, we'll move to committee discussion and action. Senator Hunoff. Motion to pass by Senator Hunoff, seconded by Senator Valley. Discussion on that motion. Seeing none.
I'll just make a comment.
Senator Valley.
It just looks like it's something that's overdue. Laws that are either been superseded by other laws or laws that were put on the books and never used. So it's time to get them off the books and out of the code, and I appreciate your support. Thanks.
Thank you. Well, and I would just thank Representative Johns when he speaks on these issues. I think we should listen, and it appears that we probably did listen as quickly as this bill is going, but it's nice to have you represent these issues. Pretty clear that you know what you're talking about, and we appreciate that. Any further discussion? Seeing none, the motion is due pass on House Bill 1125. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Valley.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Kirkaby.
Aye.
Hunhoff.
Aye.
Bradford.
Aye.
Bigalka.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye. Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman, House Bill 1125.
Motion consent from Senator Kirkaby, seconded by Senator Valley. Any discussion on that motion? All in favor of the consent motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. 1125 will go to the floor on consent. Thank you. All right. That concludes our agenda today, ladies and gentlemen. For Thursday, we have House Bill 1100 and four appointments, three from the Chief Justice and one from the Governor's Office. And so we'll take up House Bill 1100 and the four appointments on the 27th. And currently our rest of our schedule, and I looked today at the House agenda, and I think it's quite possible that we will not see anything further from the House into Judiciary. That's obviously not my call to make, but that's my, unless we start hearing appropriations bills, which who knows. But here's what I've got for the rest of our schedule. Our two meetings next week will wrap it up for this committee. On March 4th, Tuesday, House Bill 1199 and 1118. And on March 6th, House Bills 1063, 1169, 1127, and 1229. Okay? All right. We'll see you at 8 o'clock on Thursday. Any further business for the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion by Senator Monroe, seconded by Senator Valley. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? We are adjourned.